Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 27th of July, recording at 9:20 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. Asian stock markets mixed. India was a little weaker. China was a bit stronger, all the China markets. So is South Korea, Taiwan. So they're more steady than, more up than down. And in the amazing Indonesia pushed higher as well, though it's now becoming overextended relative to its 200-day moving average. In Europe, stock markets were weak. Now, the biggest decline was 2.81%. for the Italian MIB index, and that's because those Italian bond yields had another upward nudge today, not through the highs that we had seen last week, but they're not all that far off those highs either, and that spooked the markets a little bit in here. And we had gains, for instance, DAX down 1.32, the FTSE down 1.23, and they closed pretty much near the lows of the day. The Americas had one market up that I can see, and that was Mexico, up 0.73%. But Brazil was hit hard, down 1.77. The States was hit hard, both the S&P and the NASDAQ down over 2 points. The NASDAQ composite down 2.65. Now, elsewhere, precious metals had very good, well, let me take the bonds first. The U.S. Treasuries were slightly lower, the bond futures prices, but gilts and bunds rallied really quite sharply. Now, the U.S. dollar was firmer today, although I'm looking around, the U.S. dollar index is certainly up. Yes, the euro's down. It's fallen back to 143.63. That's down 148. And sterling is also down, but that powerful Australian dollar is higher, and a number of the Asian currencies are higher. So it's really the dollar up against the weaker Europeans. Now, precious metals were quite strong early on in the day, but then coughed up those gains. Gold, for instance, rallied up to a new high at 16.2805, new high in U.S. dollars in nominal terms. But then fell back almost $20, fell back $19 to be precise, but then off that high, and then closed out, well, it's lost trading at 16.14 and change. That's down 4.90. Silver had romped up by early afternoon, British summertime, was up at $41.46, but then fell back to just above 40, and is currently at 40.23.5. So that's down 46 cents on the day. Palladium, similar, got up to 847.5, but now back to 828, down $19 off that high. Platinum similar, up to 1823, currently at 1800 flat. That's down 7. In industrial metals, they were mostly lower, except I think it was tin and nickel. Nickel had been a laggard recently. Both of those were higher here today. The grains and beans mixed. Rough rice down a little bit. Corn and wheat up a bit. Soybeans down a bit. Crude oil fell back today. We've got NYMEX to 97.20, And I want to have a look at Brent, because that had not registered with me earlier on. That's fallen back. It's at 117.35. And in soft commodities, cotton, we hadn't realized it until this morning, but cotton had had an upside weekly key, I beg your pardon, an upside daily key reversal yesterday, and had some follow-through today following a quite overstretched decline. Okay. So what's going on here overall? Well, obviously a lot of nervousness, less nervousness in Asia. There are people in the West who are very nervous about Asia, but fewer of them in Asia who are nervous about Asia. And the ones who are nervous about Asia are mostly nervous about China and a little bit of India, where we still are seeing the monetary tightening. And monetary tightening is a hefty headwind for stock markets. They get a little bit of respite when people think, well, we're nearly at the end of that monetary tightening cycle, but clearly we aren't, as we've seen from this week's developments in India with that half point interest rate hike by the Reserve Bank of India. Now, as I've said before, these central bankers do not know when they're going to back off the monetary tightening, because they don't know when those inflation pressures are going to subside. They often speak hopefully or optimistically about that, but they simply don't know. My feeling really is that it would take a real stock market fright, which translated into somewhat slower GDP growth, to push those commodities down sufficiently for the central banks to go to a neutral stance, let alone a stance of monetary accommodation. But what's interesting, you look around the globe, let's take a worst case scenario. Let's say markets sort of fall back quite, stock markets sort of fall back quite sharply. Because China and India have tightened rates quite a bit, the moment we had a whiff of deflation fears, on a global basis, they would be in a strong position to cut back rates and supply a monetary stimulus. And China would no longer be worried about its bubbles, and India doesn't have any bubbles. So that they're in a healthier position. Not so, not so the West. And but what about that risk? Well, these are event-driven markets, as I've described it here in the very short term, with all the focus on the European sovereign debt situation among the periphery countries. And those Italian yields are a worry. I think what the market's going to want to see is plenty of action in terms of not only kicking up enough money to deal with the situation, various technical aspects of dealing with it, but also to come up with some sort of permanent solution. And there's only one path to that, and that's the fiscal integration. People have known that. We've known that for 11 or 12 years before the euro was launched, or back before, in other words, the euro was launched. And the founding fathers of the euro, they knew that as well, but they knew that you weren't going to get any kind of fiscal conversion without well, they just knew that the populations would not back that. But I think people feel quite quite differently now. If they want to keep the Euro project afloat, that's the direction in which you're going to have to move. And everybody knows that, but of course it takes time. It all takes time, and meanwhile those yields are swinging around fairly fairly wildly. The more serious situation right now, in my opinion, is the U.S. debt ceiling issue. Now, this can really work out three ways, in my opinion. And the first way is that we get an ideal solution, which is, well, ideal in inverted commas, but a best case solution under the circumstances, in which we get bipartisan agreement to make some meaningful cuts to reduce the budget deficit, and that the deal is sufficient to extend beyond the next presidential election. Now, I'm far removed from Washington, D.C., where all this is playing out, or in the meeting halls of Midtown America, but my hunch is that it'll be fairly difficult at this late stage to get the so-called ideal solution. And I don't think the Republicans are in any mood to give Obama a free hand in the run-up to the election on this issue. The other possibility is that we get a short-term fudge, something that lasts 6 months or so, but expires before the November presidential election, and is seen as just scraping together a deal so as not to create the risk of default sometime next week. Now that's probably a high possibility. I would put it as probability. The other one is that they don't pass anything, and then we get a little bit of a flap, and that's probably a euphemism for a little bit of market panic. Now, I think with either of those two latter solutions, in other words, anything other than what I described as the best case solution, I think we're likely to get downgrades of U.S. debt. And it's hardly surprising. I think the figure, I, this is, I'm in the, I'm going to be in the ballpark on the figure, but I think U.S. debt is sort of 94% of GDP, last I saw, but rising rapidly, whereas GDP growth is not rising rapidly. So the debt downgrade, I think, is a real possibility. How will it affect long-dated government bond yields? Well, they should go up in a logical world, but these markets haven't always been logical. There's been a lot of emotion in it, and I realize in saying that I'm open to the criticism that I'm not being logical about it. But you know, when you see UK 10-year gilt yields just around the, I think, just fractionally above or right on that 3% level, yet the UK debt situation is similar to that of a number of those periphery southern European economies. There's quite a disconnect there, but everybody knows that the UK can devalue sterling and has been doing just that. And they also know that the UK is free to print money, but that's not necessarily reassuring, particularly at a time when the inflation's been running persistently high. So what I'm saying is that those UK gilt yields are much too low, just as the US Treasury yields are much too low. Nobody's talking at the moment that I'm aware of in the rating agencies of downgrading UK debt, but this is going to be a struggle. This is a big struggle for the UK because the economy is so soft. So my point really is that, you know, we don't necessarily get what I think is, with a cold, beady, analytical eye, a logical outcome on this. People are nervous, for sure. It's reflected in market action, and we should expect that to continue in here for a while. Now, the most important thing that happened today were those big downward dynamics in the U.S. Stock market. And the Nasdaq one in particular, because the Nasdaq often leads, and it had the biggest percentage decline, down 2.65% on the Nasdaq composite. So That occurred near the top of the range. It has reaffirmed resistance at the top of the range. And the knee-jerk response from everybody in the market is, well, if it can't go up, it's going to go down from here. And while I'm a little bit cautious overall in the sense that these markets are so dominated now by this debt ceiling issue that if I was surprised and they suddenly cobbled something together very quickly that the market accepted, we could just as easily get a quick rebound to the upside. But just on pure technical action alone, and leaving aside the debt ceiling mitigating circumstances, those look like sell signals. And I think there is a real risk that we will see these markets go back down and have a look at the lower side of the range, at least. Put it this way, they need countermanding dynamics to back to the upside or closes above this month's high, either one of those, to offset that risk that we go somewhat lower in here. Now, in terms of currencies, the Asian currencies and to a slightly lesser extent, South American currencies have been doing very well. One of the advantages of fuller money themes, particularly those Asian growth-led themes, is that the currency provides a cushion against, well, for and those of us who live in the UK, continental Europe, USA, they provide a good hedge against the weakness of those three of the three currencies of those respective countries and regions. They also really cater to where the growth is, or are at the epicenter of that global GDP growth. So, while it's never comfortable being buffeted around by markets, I'm not. I've got my well. I'm looking ahead in terms of the big long-term picture here, which I think very much favors the fuller money cyclical themes. But you know, if we get a slowdown in the business cycle, and we have as a result of that previous oil price spike back in April, that's going to hold everything in check. Commodity prices are still a problem, and we have this euro situation plus the U.S. debt ceiling thing. Well, the U.S. debt one's going to be resolved pretty quickly. Because and there will be they will lift the debt ceiling. It's just whether they go beyond the deadline or not. So that will become a non-event fairly quickly, but I don't think the downgrade will be a non-event. Downgrade of US debt ratings, that will weigh on sentiment a bit overall. What about, last but not least, what about precious metals in this environment? And they look more than capable of pushing higher, certainly over the medium term. I'm talking fourth quarter and first quarter of next year, in line with what has been that seasonal consistency pattern that we've seen over the last decade. It's not hard to think of reasons why that would play out again this time. We've got a weak U.S. dollar. Nobody has a tremendous amount of confidence in any of the fiat money currencies. We've got the restocking for jewelry buying. We've got the Chinese New Year buying, the India wedding season buying. And is there a headwind in there? Well, yes, scrap. There's scrap gold around, but we've also got some strikes pending in South Africa and some other mining areas. So I think this looks okay here for a run. But after 4 or 5 weeks to the upside, do we get a pause and consolidation in what's a choppy, sort of nervy market environment generally? Well, that's a real possibility. We should certainly expect that. But I think that the reaction lows for gold following its new high and also for silver following its earlier big correction, those are already in. That's probably true of platinum and palladium as well. So that's a sector that looks extremely interesting, and I want to be there, although it may be well, as I say, we might see some volatility. Silver is high beta gold. Will gold be volatile? Not anywhere near as volatile as just about everything else, in my opinion. And that's what we saw. Well, that's what we've seen over a number of years now. It outperforms almost everything, but is also less volatile. And anything else to mention there on my list? Yeah, the have a look at the cotton chart. Owen and I bought a little cotton this afternoon, and it looks like it's due for a bounce. It's also an example, and that email that I had a couple of days ago, it would have been on Monday, when somebody said, how do you know when something's cheap? And it's best to give a technical answer to that. One can also produce a fundamental answer, but the technical answer is harder to rationalize. And you'll see what I mean when you look at the charts. And well, interesting times, I'm pretending I'm enjoying it, and for the most part I am. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.